You are listening to Books Are My People, a podcast for book lovers with book news, recommendations, and ruminations on living a literary life in Los Angeles. This is episode 106, and I'm recording on Monday, August 7th. I'm back. For any new listeners out there, let me introduce myself. I only do this from time to time. I'm Jennifer Calogeras. I'm a published author, a writing instructor, both privately and at UCLA Extension's Writers Program. I'm a freelance editor and writing mentor. I also make books. I make upcycled journals for creatives, and I dabble in visual arts. Basically, my life revolves around books in many different ways. And I've recently joined the Substack community. I'm on there as Jennifer Calogeras. You can probably find me there by searching for Books Are My People, but I'll leave a link in the show notes if you want to visit over there where I post twice a week. Did you miss me? I missed you. I really did miss recording, but I also really needed a break. I recently spoke on a book podcast panel at a bookstore in Highland Park, and I was alongside some pretty bigwigs in the bookish podcasting community, like people who podcast for a living, not cobble together five different jobs like I do. And when I told the room that I was on hiatus, the other hosts were like, we've never once taken a break. So I'm here to tell you, if you're grappling with the idea of taking a break from something, maybe it's an activity or a commitment or whatever, it's okay to take a break. In fact, it's incredibly restorative. Since my last podcast aired, I've read 16 books. I've traveled, I've done a ton of art, and a lot of socializing with friends. So here's to breaks. I know some kids are already back in school, but we have a few more weeks of summer break. If you follow me on Instagram at Jennifer Calogeras, you know we spent a week in New York and in Princeton, New Jersey. We saw a few Broadway shows in New York. Sweeney Todd was just incredible. And we had so much fun exploring the city, even in the crazy heat and humidity. And Princeton was just a dream. My son played hockey in a 100-year-old stone rink. Then we were off to Vegas for my other son's hockey tournament in the, and I'm not even exaggerating, 117-degree heat. It was unreal. By the time this episode airs, we will be returning from a quick trip up the California coast to visit some UC schools and visit my friends in San Francisco. My oldest is applying to college this year, which just blows my mind. I have so much more personal news to share, but I'll save that for the next episode. While I'm thinking of it, be sure and sign up for my weekly newsletter where I handpick my most anticipated book releases for the week. You can sign up at booksaremypeople.com. And now it's time for some bookish news. The Booker Prize long list is out. I'll leave a link to it in the show notes. There are 13 books on the list, and I'm embarrassed to say I've read none of them. 10 writers are on the list for the first time. 4 are debut authors. They hail from 7 different countries around the world, and the list is heavily Irish this year. I think maybe I will start with Paul Murray's The Bee Sting. Let me know if you've read that one and how it is. You can reach me at booksaremypeople@gmail.com. According to NPR, the descendants of Henrietta Lacks have reached a settlement regarding her stolen cells. If you haven't read The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, I implore you to read this compelling work of nonfiction, which looks at how the HeLa cells named after Henrietta Lacks and taken in the 50s from her body and used without her consent or knowledge, or her family's consent or knowledge once she passed away, were used to develop so many treatments, including vaccines spanning from polio to COVID-19. Lacks grew up in Roanoke, Virginia, and her family lived in poverty while medical companies made millions and continue to make millions off of the profits her cells provided. Readers can now access banned books through a new app called the Banned Book Club, created by the Digital Public Library of America. By allowing the app to see a reader's location, it will recommend banned books in nearby libraries and provide ebook editions. I think I've made my stance on banned books crystal clear. The banning of any books is reprehensible, and I've made it my mission this year to place a banned book in a little free library each month and post its location on Instagram. I haven't yet placed my August book, but stay tuned. Today's guest author book recommendation comes from Eva Silverfine.
I loved her novel, How to Bury Your Dog, about an animal lover and budding community leader. She's also the author of Elastic Walls and the book Ephemeral Wings, told from the point of view of a mayfly. And this book was a finalist in the Next Generation Indies Book Award. At the time of this recording, all three of these books are free on Amazon Kindle. So let's hear her book recommendation.
Hi, this is Eva Silberfine with a review of the novel Shark Heart, A Love Story, by Emily Habeck. The book will be out August 8, 2023. I received an ARC from Simon & Schuster. This imaginative novel succeeds first in making what sounds impossible plausible, a world in which some humans carry mutations that eventually cause them to transform into other animals, such as a great white shark. Habeck succeeds at bringing this gradual transition and the entire novel to the reader in very accessible prose that, in its seeming simplicity, touches on fundamental life experiences: loss, grief, fear, love, hope, dreams, and she does so with humor. An authentic voice, a deeply imagined plot, and well-developed characters make this a page-turning read.
I am so looking forward to reading Shark Heart, and I recently selected it as my free pick for my birthday month through the Book of the Month Club. Eva was a previous guest on Books Are My People, and you can listen to her interview on episode 78, which I will link up in the show notes. Many of you know that my amazing dad turned 90 in July, and we were both so touched by all of your well wishes. So many people reached out to say how much they love the episodes featuring my dad on this podcast. So, to kick off this new season of Book Talk, Ron Clark is back. You have to excuse the sound issues. There was a lot going on, which I will explain, but forgive me in advance. I know him as Dad, but you know him as the writer of Mel Brooks movies, a Pink Panther movie, TV shows like Moonlighting and Silver Spoons, and for fans of older television, The Smothers Brothers, The Danny Kaye Show. I could go on and on and on. He's also written a handful of Broadway plays. So, hi, Dad. Any other credits you'd like to add?
No, that's okay. We don't have time.
I have to explain our current situation.
Yes, please.
Typically, when I interview a guest, I record through Zoom audio. And if you'll recall, my neighbors are doing construction, so I've moved my podcasting into the basement where I sit under a blanket or else there's terrible acoustics. So since my dad lives one freeway exit away, we thought we'd do this interview in person, which means here we are, both under the blanket, in the dark, speaking to you. How are you feeling about that?
Well, as a 90-year-old, I'm starting to feel older by the second, living in a blanket.
So you recently celebrated a milestone birthday. How did that feel?
You know, actually, it didn't feel bad at all. In fact, it's been a whole week or two of celebrations, so I'm feeling okay.
Are you sick of celebrating your birthday?
A little.
We went to the Hollywood Bowl as one of your many celebrations.
Oh, which, by the way, was a Sondheim evening.
It was a Sondheim celebration.
And I think it was thanks to you and Basil.
Correct.
Right. It was a gift.
On the way home, we listened to the soundtrack to A Little Night Music, and there's that line that Henrik sings as he's playing the cello, "I'll be 90 on my deathbed," which feels absolutely ridiculous because you are so vivacious and full of energy and mental acuity.
Yes, very true. Very, very true.
Are you working on anything new?
My memoirs.
Multiple?
Well,
you've lived so many lives. Do you get more than
yeah,
one?
Yeah, actually, I lived three different lives. The first 30 years, I was kind of floundering more or less. And then the next 30 years where I never stopped working. And the last 30 years where I did nothing at all. except write memoir.
Do you have any plays in production right now?
I have a play I can't keep track. You know, you don't know about plays. You only find out after they've been done, the ones that are done throughout the U.S. and Canada. But on the foreign ones, I just had one actually close at the end of July in Paris, after having played there 3 months, but it's also played there three other years. I've been very lucky with my plays in that they've done really well all over the world, and especially in Paris.
I saw one of your plays in Greece, in Athens, when we were there.
Oh, you poor thing. You also happened to see the play that can be messed up very easily.
Well, I didn't know what they were saying, so I couldn't really judge whether or not they messed it up.
Then you're lucky.
What are your thoughts on the current writer's strike? This is not your first strike.
The strike is not really affecting me, but I feel for the current writers, and I definitely support them. And I try to pick it every now and then, but it's not easy. At my age, I can't stand for long periods, but I've done it a couple of times, and I'll do it again.
Is there anything that scares you?
I don't like feeling pain, like my back and leg hurt. That scares me because I like to keep active. And, I was playing tennis up until a year ago and riding bikes, and I get a little nervous about my balance. So that scares me a bit. But other than that, not too much.
Except for your compoundophobia. Do you know that you suffer from that affliction?
I did not.
That is the fear of buttons. This is something my sister and I discovered when we were in Montreal,
where
my parents are from.
Oh, I wish you hadn't
mentioned
that. He doesn't
even want to talk about it. It makes him so uncomfortable.
I don't like buttons.
My mom's side of the family ran a garment factory, and so when I was little, they used to bring boxes of buttons out for me to play with, and I can't even say the word.
No, for some reason,
this was like 5 years ago. Clearly, I was no longer little, but we were talking about buttons, and then all of a sudden, there was a box of buttons at the dinner table, and we found out that Ron Clark couldn't touch them, didn't want them near him. The sound of them.
I'm okay with buttons on shirts and jackets. I just don't like when they're loose.
So, no loose buttons.
Please. Never.
But there's the fact that there's a word for that on the internet.
Amazing.
Compoundophobia. Yeah. You're not alone in your fear.
There's a word for every single phobia imaginable.
Do you think there's one for fear of being under a blanket for long periods?
I'm sure there is.
Because we're experiencing that.
I am experiencing it now. All I need now is some buttons, and I'll run out of here.
What advice would you give to aspiring TV and film writers?
Keep writing. And I wouldn't know how to do it now, but I guess you write, you submit, and you hope somebody likes what you're writing.
It is now time to move on to the book recommendations. I am going to readjust myself here, so I am sitting directly in front of the mic instead of awkwardly off to the side as I've been doing this recording. So my first pick is The English Teacher by Lily King, and this came out in 2005. I didn't read it back then because I had my first child in 2005, so I was a little bit busy with that. Lily King is such a treasure. She has a huge backlist, including Euphoria and Writers and Lovers. I picked up The English Teacher in the bargain stacks at the Strand Bookstore. They have a pop-up shop just on the outskirts of Central Park in New York. And this book is about Vita, a high school English teacher who has a teenage son named Peter. She remarries a grieving widower named Tom, and now Vita and her son join Tom's kids, who are in a lot of pain from losing their own mother. Everyone seems to be silently struggling in this novel that alternates points of view between Vida and her 15-year-old son. The historical backdrop is the Iran hostage crisis of 1979, and I suppose in their own subtle ways, each character in this novel is a hostage of their circumstance. This is a quiet, sad novel and moving novel about grief and family. And again, that's The English Teacher by Lily King. Dad, what is your first pick?
Okay, this book is a very small book called The Finale, and it's by D.T. Max. And it's he was writing, this young person, I assume, was writing an article for The New Yorker and following Stephen Sondheim around, just about a year before Stephen passed away. And what's interesting about it is that he did it in various sessions, sometimes skipping a whole month or more. But he spent a lot of time with Sondheim, and it was just interesting to hear Sondheim discuss his career and what he was actually working on at the present. And what he was working on was really interesting. He was trying to develop a musical using two Buñuel films, The Exterminating Angels, or Angel, I guess, and The Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie. And he was going to do a musical in two separate sections, two stories. The first act would have the based on the first film, and the second act on the second film, Buñuel film. And he never did finish it. And in fact, there's talk now of somebody trying to finish it for him. I hope that doesn't come true, because if it's not pure Sondheim, then it's probably not worth it. And I guess he was having a lot of trouble putting those two thoughts together. But it was so interesting to see what his daily life was like. It's a very short book, as I said, but it's really worth, if you like Sondheim, as so many people do, I think anybody would enjoy it. The title of the book is called The Finale, and it's by D.T. Max.
My second pick is Wide Sargasso Sea by Jean Reese. I also read this one on vacation, and I think I purchased it at the bargain bin, do you sense a theme here, at Labyrinth Books in Princeton, New Jersey, which was one of the most amazing bookstores I've ever been to. A friend of mine who's an English professor recommended this novel years ago. It was written in 1966, and it's linked to Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre. I'm sure most listeners are familiar with that novel, but it's where the trope of the madwoman in the attic was originally created, born out of this notion of female hysteria. So Bertha was the OG madwoman in the attic, and what Jean Reese has done is to reinterpolate Bertha and give her her own story, her own agency in Wide Sargasso Sea. We learn that her birth name was Antoinette, and she grew up Creole in the Caribbean on the Calubria estate. She's 10 years old when the Emancipation Act of 1833 puts an end to her family's slave-owned estate. After her father drinks himself to death, she and her mother and brother remain on the deteriorating estate, but now the power has shifted, and her neighbors and former slaves, now servants, understandably hate her family. We learn how Bertha meets Mr. Rochester, the main male character in Jane Eyre, and the book is told in alternating points of view between Bertha and Mr. Rochester. It took Reese 9 years to write this slender novel. The characters are complex and compelling, and I love the idea of books in conversation with one another. This made me want to go back and read Jane Eyre. And again, that's Wide Sargasso Sea by Jean Reese. Also, I recently watched the movie Emily about Emily Bronte. It came out in 2022, and it's currently on Paramount Plus or Amazon. I can't remember which one, but it was pretty good. And it gives you the backstory on how Emily Bronte came to write Wuthering Heights, which is my favorite of all the Bronte sisters' novels.
My second recommendation actually is plural. They're all by the same author, and it's an old book. They're all old books. I happened to be in our den at home where our bookshelves are, and I just glanced over and I saw Nathaniel West's name, and I just remembered how much I enjoyed three of his, he wrote four books, and how much I loved three of his books. I read Miss Lonely Hearts, which really I thought was sensational. Then I immediately read A Cool Million, and then I followed that up with The Day of the Locust. And all three, any of those threes, would be highly recommended. They stayed with me. I read them a long time ago when I was, God, I must have been in college, I think, or maybe just out of college. And I still remember those books clearly, and I loved every one of them. They're disturbing and really well written. He wrote a fourth book that I forget, and I think I started reading that, and I didn't like that one. But the other three, I would highly recommend.
Three out of four isn't bad for an author's oeuvre.
I'd say it's very, very good.
So, Miss Lonely Hearts,
A Cool Million.
Oh. In tandem.
Yes. And The Day of the Locust.
I read The Day of the Locust in college in a Literature of the West
Did you find it disturbing?
It was disturbing, but yeah. As people know, I kind of like the disturbing.
By the way, there was a film made of Day of the Locust, also very disturbing, with Donald Sutherland in the key role.
Oh, he does a lot of disturbing films.
Yeah.
Did.
I think so.
Hmm. We don't know.
It could be, might be my age by now, or older.
I'm going to look it up. Breaking news, Donald Sutherland is still alive, and he is 2 years younger than you, and he's Canadian.
Yeah, not only a Canadian, he's from Montreal.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
This episode is turning out to be a celebration of Backlist, which I read a lot of this summer. Starting next episode, I will have many more new releases, as I'm reading well into October releases right now. So my last pick is Small World by Laura Zigman. She's the author of Separation Anxiety, which I recommended on episode 20, as well as many other books. I saw her speak about Small World at the Los Angeles Times Book Festival this spring, and I found her to be really funny and compelling, which is how I feel about this novel. This is a novel about sisters. Joyce is just settling into her new life as a divorcee living in Cambridge, Massachusetts. She enjoys her space, and she likes perusing Small World, which is an online community that gets into everyone's business. I think she must have based it off of the app Nextdoor or something like it, which can be excellent fodder for fiction material. When her older sister Lydia calls to tell her that she is leaving Los Angeles and moving back east, Joyce invites her to come live with her while she figures out her new life. They have a fraught history together, and Joyce is convinced that they can mend their fractured relationship by cohabitating. But of course, this new setup creates more drama, or else it would be a boring book, and now it involves the neighbors upstairs who are making an awful lot of noise. The sisters had a third sister, Eleanor, who was severely disabled and died when the girls were young. Despite everything I've just said, there are a lot of really funny moments in this novel about sisters and middle age and life, and when I saw Zigman speak, her own sister was in the audience. And the author shared that they too had a disabled sister, and it was interesting to hear that she based parts of this novel on her own life. And again, that's Small World by Laura Zigman. Dad, what are you going to be reading next?
Next, I'm going to be reading a book you gave me called Oscar Hammerstein and the Invention of the Musical. And it's by somebody called Laurie Weiner.
Laurie Weiner.
I did want to say this. I'm also going to be rereading a couple of books that I read early on in French when I was educated. As you know, I went to French school till midway through high school, so that I read all, you know, the Victor Hugo's and Voltaire and Jean-Jacques Rousseau. I'm curious to reread Candide, which I remember liking very, very much. Did you know that there was a musical called Candide?
I did. I've seen it.
You did? And did you know that Leonard Bernstein, who wrote the score?
I did know that.
And that Stephen Sondheim added some lyrics?
I did know that.
Wow. Well, then you know everything.
I don't.
So I may not have to read it again. You just tell me about it.
I only remember one song from that musical.
Yeah.
And I don't know the words.
It's that, da 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 da. That one?
No. Oh. I don't know da 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 da. I know. Dun da, dun dun da. The best of
Oh,
the
yeah, yeah.
Is that what you were singing?
No.
Oh, what
no.
were you singing?
I'm singing what became a theme song for a television show many years later. Dun, 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 dun.
That's what I was just singing.
Oh, yeah. No, no, mine is. Da, 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 da.
I am going on a road trip this weekend, and I'm going to force everyone to listen to a new book called Whale Fall, which is a thriller by Daniel Krauss about a scuba diver who is swallowed by a whale. I'll be back in 2 weeks with author Danae Miller, whose forthcoming novel, One Blood, has one of the most beautiful covers I've ever seen, and it comes out on September 5th. Don't forget to sign up for my newsletter at booksaremypeople.com. I send it out each Tuesday on book release day, with a curated list of new books that I'm looking forward to reading. I'll be back in 2 weeks, and in the meantime,
I hope you all have a wonderfully bookish week.
Thanks, Dad.